Welcome to The Shed Wireless, a podcast for shedders, produced by the Australian Men's Shed Association and hosted by John Paul Young.
Yeah, there's something for you at the Men's Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Shed Wireless podcast, made in Australia and distributed all over the world for the love of shedding. We've got a great episode for you today. Let me tell you what's coming up. Our special guest today is Layla McNeil, who is one of the New South Wales Tidy Towns judges. She's going to talk to us about the Tidy Towns Awards and how your shed can enter. Marty caught up with Nick and Michael from JCAR and discovered the wonderful world of 3D printers in On the Tools. In On the Pulse, Dr. John Ward tells how it's possible to age positively, and I'm positive I'm aging, and what you can do to make aging easier. It's coming pretty easy for me, I can tell you. Our shedder in the spotlight is Peter O'Leary, who started a music jammers group at the Dingley Village Men's Shed in Victoria. And Mac and myself will delve into some of the wonderful music of the 70s and some of that stuff that Peter's going to be talking about from the Dingley Village Men's Shed. Okay, let's get into it.
You're listening to The Shed Wireless with my good friend, John Paul Young. It's a podcast for shedders. Across Australia and around the world, get ready to shed.
Yeah, there's something for you at the Men's Shed.
Layla McNeil, an environmental strategist and change agent, has dedicated her career to sustainability. Currently stationed at CSIRO, Layla spearheads waste reduction and resource recovery efforts, crafting impactful strategic plans that drive real-world change. She's also a director of Keep Australia Beautiful and a judge of the Tidy Towns Awards. And she talks to us about how you can enter your men's shed and possibly win a great award, just like several sheds have already done. Now, Layla, being an environmental strategist, that sounds good. Now, what's a change agent?
Oh, a change agent is somebody that can facilitate new ways of doing things, and mm-hmm. in particular, our relationship with ourselves and with nature, and to try to forge new pathways of understanding who we are and our place on this beautiful planet.
Have you been successful? You're getting through, do you think?
Well, behavior change in particular, there's two ways. There's the fear-based behavior change, and then there's the longer, more sustainable behavior change, which is really about encompassing kindness and normative behavior, as in this is the norm that what we do here, right? And inducting people into, I guess, a kind approach to how we maneuver through our neighborhoods and talk to our communities. So it's more of a cultural change.
Now, you're a director of Keep Australia Beautiful and a judge of the Tidy Towns Awards.
I am.
We see many of them as we drive around, to Tidy Towns winners. Now, can you explain exactly what you have to be to, you know, you don't just have to have the gutter swept sort of thing. There's a lot more to winning a Tidy Towns Award, isn't there?
Absolutely. Well, look, there is several different categories that Tidy Town participants can apply for. But in general, for the major Tidy Town Award, it's a lot bigger than just looking pretty. It's actually about education. It's also about community participation, community spirit, and honoring our heritage. So it's a collective understanding of who we are and how we participate in our communities. So it's not just it, as the words say, it's tidy town. It's not about just being clean. It's about incorporating different people in your communities and making change at that very local level. And so broader, it's really about sustainability.
Right. Now, what does a tidy town encompass? Is that like a suburb of a major city? Can that qualify, or does it have to be like a town, on its own, standing out there?
Well, we have different population categories that applicants can apply for. So just to let you know, we actually have two programs, one called Tiny Towns and one is Sustainable Cities. Sustainable uh-huh. Cities is really those council areas within the city of, just say, Sydney, right? And sure. I think there's about 50 councils there. Yeah. And the remaining Tidy Towns is really about the town and the surrounding suburbs of that town and its population. So as people apply for awards in different categories, such as community spirit, there's recycling and waste, there's communications, there's biodiversity and, you know, rehabilitation types of awards, and more, right? Mm-hmm. It is based on your population category. So for smaller right. towns, we recognize that you may not have the same facilities and support that larger towns have. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't apply, because your efforts, whether you're in a town of 400 people or a town of 40,000 people, become equalized. So your efforts reflect kind of where you are in our space, in Australia or New South Wales space.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the men's sheds have got involved with Tidy Towns.
Absolutely. Yeah, men's sheds often put in at least 3 or 4 applications a year in different categories, of course. And as a judge I've been judging for about 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I often see a lot of men's sheds application reflecting waste and resource recovery or reuse. That is kind of the area in which I have the most expertise and understanding. So I tend to focus on those applications. And so I've got a few, I'm always actually quite impressed with the men's shed in regards to their repurposing and repairing.
Yes, it's wonderful, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, we have a new category, the circular economy, in which I'd like to see more of the men's shed apply for, because uh-huh. in that reuse space is really moving us towards a more circular economy and, and getting value from things that we'd normally throw away. But it's more than just that, isn't it? It's not just about fixing things or finding, repurposing new items. It's also about how the men's shed reach out to the broader community and have yeah. different partners.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And, you know, that's one thing about men's sheds. They really do so much in the community. I'm so pleased to be a part of them. Now, you must still shake your head at the resistance that we had for recycling bottles and things, a few years ago, and look at the success that it has become.
Absolutely. The container deposit scheme in New South Wales really has driven down litter of our container. Container litter has basically gone off a cliff. So you will rarely see containers now as a littered item because it has value. And we'd like to see, almost like in my world, and this is where I'd like to go, is that there is no waste. There is no waste in nature. Everything gets recycled on this finite planet. Yeah. And this is how our economies and the way we look at materials should mimic our natural systems. Now, we might do this differently and have new innovative solutions, but certainly every material that we don't want should have a place or a value where it can go.
I was reading an article last week which got me rather excited. It was about mixing soft plastics with degraded soil from PFAS. And they reckon that they've come up with some sort of polymer that is as strong as concrete. So, you know, that really lifted my spirits when I read that.
Well, it's always good to look at replacing these forever chemicals, because, it's nice to, embed it in a concrete, but these chemicals will last and persistently last probably longer than that concrete block. That concrete block may last a few hundred years, but then we demolish buildings and we find that population grows or we find new uses in the land. So, But I guess that's a temporary solution for a very long-term problem.
Yeah. Now, back to the men sheds. Have you got any tips that you can give the sheds about entering into the party?
Okay. Well, in March, mid-March, we'll be opening up our applications for Tidy Towns. Okay. And we basically would like your listeners to have a look at our website at www.kabnsw.org.au and have a look at the previous winners as well as the highlight of the Men Sheds applicants or winning applicants. Reach out to those Men Sheds too. It's all about networking. This, as much as it is a celebration, it is not a competition. And in fact, any application that we receive will be looked at and honored, and hopefully an opportunity for you to understand and learn from each other.
Yeah, I think it's great. It really is, and it's a wonderful thing. And now, even though if you're from a very tiny town, a tiny yep. tiny town, you still got a good chance of.
Absolutely! And in fact, I love judging the tiniest of all the towns, because you'll find the applicant is not only the publican; he's the mailman or the recycler, right? And in fact, is the one in one stop shop. And their applications are full of character. And don't be afraid to put your character into these things. But I do say measure your success. So if you think it is worthy to tell your story and to put your hat in, regardless of the size of your town, we want to hear about your impact. And impact is how much have you diverted, for example? How many workshops have you done? Interview people that came to those workshops and have some sort of feedback for us about the impact of that activity or program. We really need to hear that. And not only that, we want to hear about your partnerships that have come about from this. What kind of relationships have you built because of your project or program? Because relationships are everything, you know, and it's the relationships that make a difference. It's not the name Men Shed. It's the men in the shed.
Very true. Very true. Layla, thank you so much for the very informative thing. And I'm sure the Men Sheds will get involved. I will repeat your web address later on, and we'll get them all involved, hopefully.
Wonderful.
And it's a great thing. It's a really great thing that you're doing.
Well, please apply. Keep your eye out. Follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn, KABNSW, or Keep Australia Beautiful New South Wales. We are on all social platforms. Follow us to get the most updated news, as well as bookmark our website.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Layla.
Lovely Layla to talk to you.
Thank you.
Have
Bye-bye.
A wonderful day. Bye.
On the Tools, on the Shed Wireless, with John Paul Young.
What's Marty up to in On the Tools today? Let's find out.
Thanks, JPY. Okay, today I'm in South Australia. I'm at the Regency Street Men's Shed in Enfield, South Australia. These guys are running an event here today. There's all sorts of trade exhibitors, etc., and men's sheds from all over the place here. It's a top day. But one of the exhibitors here today is J-Car. So I'm talking with Nick and Michael from J-Car because they have this awesome display of 3D printers. Now, these things, I know men's sheds, you know, back in the day, they were all sort of started with the old rusty tools from down the local widow that's donated the tools from a husband that's passed away recently. And, you know, they're not all, but the sheds nowadays, they're big time. They're not all just, you know, power saws and woodwork and metalworking. We're really stepping into the technological ages and the new century. So, but these 3D printers, I'm seeing more and more of them at sheds. And I know it's a new era of guys that are coming to the sheds, a lot of younger blood coming into the sheds, and these guys are getting into these things, but as well as the older blokes too. Yeah. So, guys, thanks for having a chat to us today. So have you seen the uptake of this sort of equipment within the sheds recently, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. We've seen, especially printers these days, are becoming so much easier to use, and the barriers to entry are so little these days that anyone can sort of plug one in and go within 10 minutes to an hour, versus years ago that was hours of coding and a bachelor's degree in electronics to put one together. These days it's 10 minutes and you're up and going.
Unbelievable. So I guess we should start. What is a 3D printer?
It's effectively a really smart hot glue gun. It pulls plastic in the back and prints it out layer by layer on the bed. Different plastics are around for different uses. So you have biodegradable plastics and carbon fibers and all different versions. You can do a range of projects with them.
So basically, so it's 3D printers. So I'm looking at some of the models of things you've done here. We've got models of all sorts of stuff. It's just ridiculous what you guys can make out of this stuff. I'm gonna take some photos. We're going to have to put it on our website and the blog, etc. But basically, it melts this cord sort of stuff into the shape or any design that you've got that you basically program into your computer. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah. So it's easy if you can do sort of like some general CAD work. There's a lot of free software out there that you can do CAD design on. But yeah, if you can make a file, then you put it into what's called a slicing software. And that basically just takes a 3D model, slices it down into layers, and it tells the printer, move like this and put the plastic down like that.
So you don't have to have a university degree to run one. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. This day and age, this is the closest to printers being a consumer item than they've ever been. A lot of printers now are out of the box, start printing with minimal computer knowledge.
Right, so an idiot like me could do it, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, 100%.
So you're calling me an idiot. There you go. Oh, nice. No, guys, that's brilliant. So what are some of the things that you see commonly these things used for? Are there practical reasons? Is it just for fun little hobbyists and things like that, or what sort of things?
They can be used for a variety of reasons. Some people print them just for fun. So print little gadgets, little trinkets and keychain holders. People print chess sets. But you can also do a lot of practical stuff. So you can print parts for your rare car or a unique piece that you can't find. For example, we've printed tool adapters over there. So you can use batteries in a fridge and many, many different adapters you can do. There's many different uses, practical, fun, everything, really.
You've really got to see this thing to believe it. It's so hard. I mean, this is radio, but like this is, these things are amazing. It's just so, for example, this thing you got printing over here, for example, what's that one?
That's just a little name badge just to put next to an FPOS machine, just to show people where to tap their card for PayWave. And it's something as simple as that that you can't buy that we can draw in 20 minutes, print out in 30 minutes, and it's ready to go within under an hour from concept to in your hand.
That was my next question, Hal. So thanks. You just preempted that. How long does it take to print? Yeah. So about 30 minutes for an object. It's going to be about, 8-10 centimetres high?
Yeah, it does depend on the density of the plastic and the print. So you can adjust the infill or the sort of the honeycomb on the inside anywhere between completely hollow up to 100%. The more of that and the more plastic you use, the longer it takes. Yep. So it really depends on how much you're putting in it.
Okay, so Michael's holding up something here. It's like a honeycomb sort of shape design, things like that. So it melts the plastic, but it comes out sort of a dry, hard plastic, layers, basically, yeah. In layers, like layer upon layer upon layer, like a sponge cake sort of thing. Yeah, look at this.
On radio, it's a little bit hard, but so in here is a hot end. So there's a ceramic heater in there. That heats up to about 200, 300 degrees, depending on the printer. This one, for example, I think is printing at 210 degrees. And it pushes out through a 0.4 millimeter brass nozzle. And then it's got a fan at the front blowing air onto it and a big fan on the side blowing cool air on. So as it's coming out, laying down, it's just cooling it as soon as possible. One of the things with newer printers that move a lot faster is the faster you can cool the plastic, the quicker you can put another layer on top of it.
Right. Okay. I think your best description you gave earlier was it's like a giant glue gun sort of thing. Basically gravity-fed glue gun sort of thing, layer of it, like, I don't know, imagine what you could make with a glue gun. You can just make anything with this with this thing. There's a sort of statue there of a Viking's head. I saw a statue there, a bust of the Incredible Hulk you've got there. I'll take some photos of.
Yep.
All sorts of stuff. Einstein, all sorts of things. So, but you can also make specialty things for replacement for parts, for plastic parts and things like that as well?
Yeah. So one of the filaments that we can print in is a nylon filament that's reinforced with carbon fiber particles, so it's got very strong mechanical properties. A good example is recently my sister hit a bird in my mum's car and broke her light bar mounts. So a bit of super glue to hold them back together. I did a quick 3D scan of them, cleaned them up on some software, and then printed them out in carbon fiber. And they've now lasted on her ball bar for about 18 months.
And what about the bird?
Not so good.
So there's some things this thing can't do. Yeah. So you couldn't do a new wing for the bird or anything like that. And prosthetics for birds, there you go. There's a whole new market. Well, there you go.
There is actually people that are printing prosthetics for animals and even for people now with 3D printers.
You are joking.
Oh, definitely. Yep. A lot of that, especially with resin printers now, you can actually get semi-body grade that they use for dentures and things like that, which you can print on a resin printer. The accuracy is so good that you couldn't make it on any other means these days.
Wow. Unbelievable. So what are the limitations? I guess it's what you can program in. I guess there are no limitations, really.
The limitations really is yourself, really, what you want to design and what you want to make. Sometimes it could be speed or space. Sometimes you might need to make a print over 3 or 4 pieces and glue it together.
Yep.
Sometimes it could be the filaments or the styles of chemicals you need to print with. It's really depending on the use case.
So I could just go into JCAR tomorrow. I could buy one of these, right?
Yep.
How do I learn how to use it? What's the next step? What are the programs I need? Anything else that has to go along with it that I have to purchase to learn how to use it? Or
so the main things you'll need, we sell nice 3D printing servicing kits if you need to modify or change anything. Really, a lot of it you can get free online. We have really handy start guides with QR codes available in the shop where you can come in, scan the code, and it takes you to our website, takes you to YouTube and other places where you can learn how to use it. But a lot of the software that they use and they come with these days is so intuitive, you can just start and use it. And within an hour or two, you sort of get a rough idea.
Wow. The sky is the limit. The sky's the limit. That's brilliant, guys. Well, I appreciate you having a chat today. But like I said, I'm seeing these pop up all the time. I've been a bit scared of them. I'd look at that and think, yeah, that's way beyond me. But I'm seeing the guys in the sheds using them all the time now. And I think, well, those guys can do it, maybe there is hope for me. But and you guys seem to think it's relatively easy. So where would you say this model that we've got here, where's that sit in the scheme of things? Is that, you know, small, medium, large? Is that maybe a starters pack sort of thing or what?
Probably not a starters one. The one we're looking at here being the Cradley K1 Max is more of a higher end semi-premium one. So it's one of the fastest printers you can buy of its style, or sort of an off-the-shelf printer you don't have to build or customize.
Yeah.
At the price of $1,500, it's not the cheapest on the market, but the speed it can do and the size it can do relative to its speed puts it probably more at a semi-premium, I guess.
This is Creality's flagship model printer, the K1. So this is the K1 Max is the one we're looking at. It's a little bit larger with a 300mm cubed build size. Which is starting to become more and more common these days in printers, as they are starting to get larger and larger as technology is going further and further forward. So, yeah, this is one of Creality's best machines and one of the higher-end machines that we do offer. Obviously, there are some ridiculous ones. I think we do one that's about
$10,000.
So say one of the sheds, so we want to give this a go, we want to just dip our toes in the water. What would be the starters pack, say?
I would either look at something like the K1 printers, even maybe not this one, maybe the one below this, which is the standard Cradley K1, which is retails for about $800,
$820.
Or down from that, we do something like the Ender series printers. They're probably one of the most popular beginner entry-level printers on the market. They start at about $349. This is their slightly upmarket version for $479, and then they go up from there.
So it's not too bad. If you just wanted to give this a go, and look, that looks like fun. That looks like really good fun. Like some of the stuff I've seen made is incredible. Guys, thank you very much. I'm going to take a whole lot of photos. We'll put them on our website, our blog, etc., so people can see this because you really have to see it. But I encourage people to get in and have a look at these. And like I said, I know a lot of the sheds are all over them. But guys, I really appreciate you give us a little bit of an explanation because it does help. Because like I said, it's the fear factor with some of these things. It's like, nah, way beyond me, no chance. But, you know, with the younger generation coming into the sheds, I think this sort of machinery and technology is really attractive to those guys. And like I said, sheds aren't all about sawdust and schwarf now. It's all about this sort of stuff. It's there. No, excellent. Thank you so much, guys. Good to see you. And, catch you soon.
Thank you.
All right, back to you, JPY.
On the Pulse, on the Shed Wireless.
G'day everybody, I'm Stuart Torrance, Shed Development Coordinator, Wellbeing and Health, and this is On The Pulse, where we discuss anything and everything to do with health and wellbeing. Today we're going to discuss positive aging. My guest today is Dr. John Ward. I'm reluctant to use his full title or even describe his area of expertise, as you might find yourself switching off and thinking, this probably isn't for me. Well, let me tell you, it is. I'll tell you, John became a doctor many years ago, completing another 6 years of study in his chosen field with lots of studies and research under his belt throughout his career. He's worked with inmate programs, an advocate for exercise to overcome falls and balances, strives to enhance the quality of life for all older Australians. John was awarded the New South Wales Senior Australian of the Year in 2024 for his work in the community that has gone on far beyond the field of medical care. John has been a driving force in promoting positive ageing, and I know he is a strong supporter of the Men's Sheds and what they do in the community for connection and camaraderie. Thanks for being with us today, and welcome, Dr. John Ward.
Thank you, Stuart, and thank you for the introduction. And I'm sure that I'll learn as much from you as you will from me.
So true, John. I always find that whenever I speak with anyone, I learn as much from them as they do from me. And as we go through the conversation and the topics, we'll all be enlightened, I'm sure. So let's get to the topic of positive aging. With a title like this, I can think it's an all-encompassing statement, and there's so many things that are a part of this topic. It's not just about healthy eating and exercise. I'm sure there's so much more involved. But to get away from the broad brush stroke, can you help us focus maybe a little bit more on what you consider to be positive aging, John?
Well, we don't really talk so much any longer about positive aging or healthy aging. We talk more about optimal aging, because not everybody has the chance to enjoy healthy aging. For it might be for genetic reasons, socioeconomic reasons, chronic illness reasons, and so on. But everybody can do the most with what they've got. What we know from the studies is that the people who do enjoy optimal aging, probably the most important component is relationships. We know that once you've got a certain amount of money, wealth doesn't make any great difference to your contentment or happiness. Your physical health is important, but not that critical. But relationships are certainly the most important thing. If you're trying to live an optimal older age, then there are certain things that you've got to do. You've got to exercise. Exercise is probably the most effective strategy, or at least one of the most effective strategies, in dealing with almost all the chronic problems that older people have. Obviously, you've got to have safe and secure habitation, which unfortunately is not the state for many older people now. And you've got to eat properly, not smoke, drink alcohol in moderation, and I'll explain what that means in a minute, and sleep well. Sleep is terribly important for optimal aging. I guess they would be the major principles.
Oh, fantastic. John, like optimal aging, I never thought of it that way. Positive aging is something that's always been on my mind, and obviously the reason I picked it for the topic. But optimal aging, I think, has that overarching connection to all the areas of life. And obviously, social connection, the Sheds have this down in spades. They get together, and the camaraderie is perfect. But is one outlet enough when it comes to social connection?
Look, the more outlets you've got, the better. I always say to people as they're going through life, if they can maintain their connections with their family, preferably someone intimate with you, such as a spouse, or very close partner, but certainly your children, and then try and retain friends. It doesn't need to be an enormous number of friends, but some friends that you can rely on, and then join activities that will introduce you to other people. Now, that could be the Med Shed, could be a book club, it could be any sort of U3A course. and that will introduce you to interesting people. The other thing that Use3A and Men's Sheds will do, of course, and a book club as well, it will expand your brain activity. And so one of the other important things, I think, as you get older, is to keep on learning. Now, the learning should be multifocal rather than just focused on one thing. If you spend all day doing Sudoku, you'll become brilliant at Sudoku, but it's not going to help your brain or anything else. So going to the med shed, learning new skills, meeting interesting people, doing some reading, some puzzles, using a computer, learning more about your garden, all of those things are very important for optimal cognition and the prevention of dementia.
John, I remember my mother-in-law used to say, I really look after my brain. I do the crossword in the paper every morning. And I said, how long does it take you? And she said, about 5 minutes. I've almost learned all the combinations and all the clues that they've given over the years. I said to her, why don't you try the cryptic crossword? And she says, oh, that's too hard. And I think that's the point you're trying to get, challenging yourself, even though it's something that may be similar to what you do, doing something a little different will stretch your brain and give you more neuroplasticity. You mentioned nutrition, John, a personal favorite of mine. I must say, as I have gone on in life, I've got a bit softer around the middle. Just through changing the roles from physical labor and activities to an office position, I've seen some of the effects on my retired brothers as well. What are your thoughts here?
Look, a balanced, sensible diet is certainly the best way to approach nutrition. Certainly overeating and then going on diets is a very poor way to approach it. My mantra is that dieting makes you fat, because inevitably people come off diets and at that stage their metabolism's gone down, they tend to be a bit less active and the weight goes on and often past where they were before. So don't diet, just approach your nutrition in a sensible way. Make sure as you get older that you have enough protein at each meal. We probably need about 20 to 30 grams of protein at every meal. Now, for most of our meals, that's not too hard. For breakfast, however, that's often difficult, particularly if people have cereal and toast. There's almost no protein in that, so they've got to work out ways to get protein in. So, and the other meals, make sure there's a lot of fruit and vegetables, some protein in each meal, and as little refined carbohydrate as you can get away with. Anything that smells nice, looks yellow, and you're attracted to, avoid like poison, because that will be poison. So all those chips and donuts and things like that are really foods that should not be eaten. But a Mediterranean-style diet where there's a lot of vegetable, fruit, pasta, rice, protein, meat, that's probably the best sort of diet to stick
to. A lot of good oils like olive oil and the like as well.
Olive oil, virgin olive oil, make sure it's virgin olive oil. Keep away from the other oils.
Good stuff. Okay. I've often thought about the word diet. And it sort of strikes me as die if you eat it. And it's got all those negative connotations for me.
Now, a lot of people say this sort of diet's expensive. It's not really. And there's very few of us that can't actually grow quite a bit ourselves. I have a big vegetable garden and and grow a number of fruits. And that provides, you know, not a huge amount of my diet, but certainly enough to take the expense off it. And most of these fruit and vegetables, if you buy them sensibly, and I noticed when I went down to Harris Farm yesterday, they have an area outside where the sort of the fruit is that doesn't exactly look perfect, but boy, it tastes perfect. So you can buy stuff that's not ultra expensive.
And reasonably priced as well, absolutely. John, when I also consider diets, I think of most people diet because they want weight loss. And then when they finish their diet, they go back to their old habits, and the weight doesn't just come on and repeat exactly what was there. It sometimes doubles and triples, and you can get in this negative cycle. So the advice you've given on dietary intake is very welcome. But it also brings up the subject of exercise and getting out there. As I mentioned before, one of the things that have created my softer sides is the fact that I've gone from a very labor-intensive sort of work life to an office space, and yet I'm eating exactly the same amount of food as I used to. Maybe increasing the exercise is the input, but what else are the benefits of more exercise, John?
Well, firstly, coming back to the diet, as soon as you diet, your metabolism slows down, so you're less inclined to exercise, and one of the things you lose is muscle and bone. So diet's really quite a dangerous thing to be doing unless you are very rigorous about your exercise activity. So for people of my age, I mean, I'm be 80 in a month or two and I'm still working. I have to exercise regularly. So my wife and I go for a walk every morning for about 40 minutes. And then we work out some resistant exercise a couple of times a week. And theoretically, I should do some more balance exercise. I don't, but I should. So for an older person, what we say is aerobic exercise, ideally every day for 30, 40 minutes, but certainly for 5 days a week. Resistance exercise a couple of days a week. Don't do it every day. Give your muscles a chance to rest. And then some balance exercises. That's the sort of ideal exercise program if you want to maintain your independence for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And then the advantages of exercise, well, there are a myriad. I mean, as I said before, there isn't almost any chronic health problem that older people suffer from that exercise isn't either the most important strategy or close to. And one of the sad things, of course, is the health system doesn't take any real interest in exercise, doesn't fund it, doesn't see it as an important health strategy. And I think that's a real tragedy. But, for example, in depression, for most depressions in older people, exercise is as effective as the drugs we use. So you can, you know, if you exercise, you can start to get off some of those drugs. We know that exercise stops people from going on from impaired glucose tolerance to type 2 diabetes, and that's almost an epidemic in our community today. It helps high blood pressure. It helps mood. It's the most effective strategy to prevent cognitive decline. It's a really important strategy in chronic neurodegenerative problems like Parkinson's disease. It's essential if you're getting cancer therapy. We know that people who exercise will get much more benefit from their cancer therapy than people who don't exercise. And for men, that becomes really critical in prostate cancer, because one of the treatments in prostate cancer is anti-androgen therapy, particularly if you've got metastatic prostate cancer, but also to get even just to prepare yourself for the treatments there are for prostate cancer. Now, these anti-androgens really eat away at muscle. And unless you're exercising, you will lose a lot of muscle strength undergoing your treatment for prostate cancer. So chronic heart failure, chronic respiratory failure, you know, there isn't almost getting people off their polypharmacy. Exercise is just important in almost every aspect of older age and the chronic diseases that go with it.
John, if you look at any health organisation, peak body representative organisation, The one fallback that they go to, each and every one of them, is diet and exercise as a preventative and as a way to help the progression or lessen the progression of all sorts of ailments. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in what you've said. The other thing that you pointed out is how exercise is really good for your mental well-being and mental health. And I've found just going for a swim first thing in the morning really sort of lights up the brain and gets me going and gets me into the day and gives me a great outlook. John, any last-minute thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, you say that exercise and diet are emphasised, but one of the programs that we've got going under Hunter Ageing Alliance has been the Active Stronger Better program. And this was our attempt to revitalise all those programs we used to have for older people under Heart Moves and Fitness for Seniors. Mm-hmm. And we now have 50 programs running, run by trained fitness leaders in about 25 locations, and we're spreading up through the Hunter Valley.
John, thank you very much for being with us today. I know the Mensheds have come on board with that Active Stronger Better program in regards to our Falls and Balance strategy, which is a warm-up routine. First thing in the morning, there'll be videos placed online for sheds to look at and watch, and that's with the great assistance of men from the Belmont and Cardiff Men Sheds who went through the exercise program for us. And there's also posters that sheds will be able to download directly from AMSA's website. And the sheds within the Hunter Valley through the Active Stronger Better program will be given their own posters to put up on the wall. But other sheds can download the posters and freely print them out and put them up in their own sheds for a nice warm-up exercise and get you guys stronger, active, and better for the day ahead within the shed. John, thank you very much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time and your comments. Just signing off for everybody, this is On The Pulse. Back to you, JPY. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Sean McAuliffe here, and you're listening to The Shed Wireless with John Paul Young. But you already know that, don't you? I mean, obviously, you've already got this set up on Spotify. You don't need me to tell you this. Take it away, John.
Yeah, there's something for you at the Men's Shed.
5 years ago, the Dingley Village Men's Shed started a music group to meet, play, discuss, learn, and have fun. From the beginner to the more experienced players and composers, they've also begun making and repairing instruments. Peter O'Leary hadn't played much in the last 40 years, and when arthritis started to take hold of his hands, he stopped altogether. But he picked up a guitar and got started again, and feels so much better for it, physically and mentally.
Okay, Peter, from two men.
Two men, yeah.
You've grown to 23 in 5 years. That's pretty incredible, you know. So, you know, have you got anybody there that's actually starting from scratch, or are they all previous musicians?
Oh, no. We've got quite a few guys who are just complete novices, you might say. Yeah, and one of them just turned 80, so there you go.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's a fairly eclectic bunch of men, you know, from probably experienced musicians to, middle-of-the-road guys just trying to find a little bit of their youth and those who are complete beginners. So it's really good mix.
So you've got some people there who've dabbled in music when they were younger and have left it behind and now trying to get back into it.
That's my hat, really. I just something I hadn't pursued for many years, although I sort of had a guitar lying around somewhere.
So you get into the jamming I've never been good at jamming, Peter.
Yeah, we're. I think some people call it noodling, don't they? We get a drum beat going and, you know, a bass going and the guys on their six-string guitars go all over the place, don't they? Just the 12-bar blue and anything can happen.
Right. So do you ever have any confrontations of, oh, no, you played the wrong chord and the wrong bit?
We do, but I think there's a lot of empathy, particularly with older males. That I think we're, if we were a lot younger, we probably would have spat the dummy or something like that. Now we gently just tapped them on the shoulder and said, I think you got the capo in the wrong spot, or things like that, or you're playing it the wrong note here or there.
For our listeners, can you tell them what a capo is?
Oh, it's a it's a spring sort of clamp that goes on to the neck of guitar, and you can play the same chord in an open position, and then put the capo on, say 3 frets down, and you're playing a different chord, basically. So the A chord can become a C chord, and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to transpose all your chords into. Into whatever key you might be playing it, yeah. It's just an you'll see. I've been watching a lot of that. Was it Australian Idol?
Yeah.
And most of the kids on that with guitars, you'll see them have a capo on their on the neck of the guitar.
Right, and it sort of it looks like a, you know, for us novices, it looks like a stick.
Yeah, basically across the top of the fretboard.
Yeah, yeah. And another great word you used in your email to us was tablature.
Oh, man. Look, I pretty much stopped playing professionally back in probably, when was it, 74 or 5, I guess.
Right.
And all my experience with learning music was watching those little black dots over those five lines. And when I rejoined the guys at the Shed, once I found we had a music group there, I thought, oh, went along and Bill, who sort of, he calls himself the facilitator.
Oh, what a good name.
He doesn't like to be called the, you know, the chief or the boss or anything like that. So he's a facilitator. And he said to me, how do you go with the tablatures? I said, what are you talking about? What's a tablature?
Well, I don't play it, so I'm a bit blind to it as well.
Yeah, well, anyway, when he showed me, I said, my God, why didn't we have this back, you know, when I was learning? And that was amazing. You know, it was a bit of a eye-opener for me. And, of course, I'm the bass player in the group, by the way.
Okay. Well, you know, that's a pretty steady part to have. I don't hear many jokes about bass players. There's plenty about guitarists and drummers.
I think one they use quite frequently about drummers is, what do they call the guy who hangs around with three musicians?
That's right, a drummer, yes. Right.
Although having a little bit of a fiddle on drums over times, I can really appreciate how difficult the job is, and particularly if you look at some of those kids on YouTube, you know, and or the young musicians, can they drum?
Fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, my grandson has a cousin who's apparently very, very good on the drums too, and we're talking about 11-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, they're amazing. Some of the kids, I think there's a couple of girls that I think a guy was telling me, I think he started watching her when she was about 8 on YouTube, and now she's about, I don't know, 14 or 15. He said she's just amazing, you know, the way she's progressed on the skins over the years. They're very clever, very clever.
Well, you know, I have to tell you my drummer joke. the drummer decides he's going to play guitar. He's had enough of the drums, so he goes into the shop and he says, "I'll have one of those guitars up there on there, and I'll have some sheet music, and I'll have a box of strings as well." And the guy says, "You're a drummer, aren't you?" And he said, "Yeah. How'd you know?" He said, "This is a fish and chip shop."
Haven't heard that one before.
So, Peter, you were in a band earlier in the 70s, you were telling me.
Yeah, I just a cover band, and we, I suppose you start off as teenagers. Basically, my background was originally probably folk music, the old Peter, Paul and Mary stuff, and Bob Seger, and, or not Bob Seger, Pete Seger. And, Joan Baez, and, of course, Bob Dylan and so forth, until he turned electric, of course. And then I sort of progressed from there. Then all of a sudden the Beatles came on the scene. I said, well, what sort of music is this? Wow, you know, and sort of progressed to, I suppose, playing rock and roll, let's face it, or those types of tunes. And, that took me into, you know, a couple of boy bands, I suppose, and then progressed to, just full-on six nights a week stuff until it just got too much for me because I was trying to do a day job at the same time. And it was just then babies started to arrive and I had to make a decision. So I left the guitar or the band well behind.
Yeah. I think it's quite a common story with anybody in music, you know, whether they, you know, pick it up or keep going with their day job.
Absolutely.
You were saying just a cover band. I've just heard lately that there's a cover band out there at the moment that is actually smashing it, and they're so good that all the original artists are getting in touch with them and saying how wonderful their cover songs are. So.
Wow.
You know, I think it's coming to that stage where the music of the 60s, 70s, maybe the 80s, 60s and 70s at least, we're all trying to, you know, we're either retired or we're dead. So, the music of that era is so strong right now.
Yeah, when you said retired or dead, you know what sort of flashed into my mind? A visual picture of Willie Nelson. Now, not sure if he's retired or dead, or maybe he's both.
But Ricky Nelson.
Yeah, Willie Nelson. I think he's 92 or something, isn't he?
Yes, he is, yeah.
Yeah, but you're right, and that's our big experience, I guess, at the music group at the Shed. You know, we'll break into smaller groups, like a guy will take a few of our novices aside and just go through a few chord progressions with them and stuff like that. But usually we end the last hour or two full on with the amps tuned up a bit.
Do you get any noise complaints?
Well, no, because we're very fortunate, Dingley Village Men's Shed, that our sheds, we've got two of them. We've got a very large amenity shed where we sort of meet and greet and have something to eat and coffee and tea, and we do our music, and the art group do their art, and their photography group do their photography, and they've got a library and whatnot. And then we've got a separate shed, which is basically just for all our tools and workshop and bits and pieces like that. So, and our two sheds are actually located in the middle of what's called Brayside Park.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's right on the edge of Moorabbin Airport, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much in that area. If you Google Brayside Park, you'll get an idea of how big it is and roughly where our sheds are, right in the middle of it. So we don't have any close neighbours. The only thing we frighten, I guess, are the birds and the possums. But
it sounds like a very artistic shed, Peter.
Very diverse, yeah.
Yeah, do you get involved in other things? Have you got the woodworkers and the metal workers, et cetera?
From time to time. We've got And we had a bit of a spurge on building guitars at one stage, I think, about 12 months ago. So I had an old electric thing that had been up in the roof of my garage for many years, and I thought, well, you know, it was never anything to look at. So I said it'd be nice if it had a nice wooden body on it, you know, and looked a bit special. Mm-hmm. So I sort of stripped it down, saved the neck and the electronics, and went into the workshop and carved out myself a body for it and then put it all together, yeah.
Oh, great. Well, it sounds like you're having a great time.
So, yeah, I get into the workshop every now and then. I'm in a little bit of a project at the moment. We're building guitar stands. So, you know, the ones that go on the floor and you stand your guitar on them.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of old flooring. You know, they come in packets and things like that. No, I'm never going to use them. I think I've got about four leftover packets of the things. So I thought, oh, well, I'll turn them into guitar stands. So we're doing that on a
Cypress flooring. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just the floating floor.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, the modern stuff. Yep.
Yeah, the modern stuff that sort of clips together and
– Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds great, Peter. You know, I'm very impressed that you're getting on with the music. And we have the Raymond Terrace just north of Newcastle. There's their shed has a band.
Oh, right.
So I might put you in touch with them and see if you can, you know, there might be a lot of common interest there, and see if you can get something going.
Yeah, well, that'd be great, John. Look, I think I mentioned about the cognitive benefits of elderly people playing music or a musical instrument, and I came across this because I put forward a grant application about this time last year to our local council to buy some audio equipment,
mm-hmm.
Rather than try and go hat in hand to our committee and say, can you give me $2,000? Anyway, we were fortunate enough to, for our local council, the Kingston Council, which I must show a lot of gratitude towards, we were fortunate in getting the money, and we've been able to purchase a mixing desk that allows us to record our music. And that's what we were doing this morning. I think that's our first try at doing it.
Yeah, the cognitive benefits of this are quite amazing, learning how to play an instrument. So I will read all that out after the interview. Thank you very much, Peter, for your
time. You're welcome.
It was great chatting to Peter about the music of the 70s. So Mac and myself decided to continue on that run and just explore it a bit deeper. Well, it's time to take a wander down to Mac's Music Shack, and seems we've just been listening all about the Dingley Village Men's Shed and their foray into the music. So we thought we'd continue that on. And Mac, this is the quintessential song that we're going to talk about that I reckon could have been heard coming out of every music store back in the 60s. Somebody having a crack at this as they're trying their brand new guitar or new amplifier.
It's really it's a starting point for so many people learning guitar, isn't
yep.
it? Do you learn
bum,
this riff?
Bum, 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 bum,
yeah. Well, my grandsons are my oldest grandson Hugo. He's learning piano and he's pretty good. You know, he's playing at church things and that now. He's only 11 or. Yeah, something like that. And his younger brother got encouraged and he decided to take up guitar, and I went around there and he was telling me about it, and I said, oh, play us something. He said, oh, yeah, all right. And as soon as he started to play it, Smoke on the Water, he was amazed that I knew the song. He didn't even know what the song was called. He just knew the riff. So it really is a starting point for people. And I know your grandson Al is he's very musical too.
Yeah, that's right. And it's amazing. It's almost overnight that he just became interested. There's always a little electric piano sitting on the veranda.
Yeah.
And you know, he'd go in there and he'd just play just whatever, you know, like nothing music related at all, just bang away on it.
Yeah.
And then one day he actually knew how to play, and you know, and it was just like self. He all of a sudden he got it.
It just gelled,
you know,
for
and
him,
it yeah. and it clicked with him, you know, and now he's really good, and he's taking lessons and things, and it's just wonderful to watch them go ahead, and that's kind of the same thing that's happening in Dingley Village, you know, because there's people there who used to play who are now getting back to it because of, you know, arthritis was one of the problems that they spoke of. And also people who've never played an instrument starting from scratch, you know. So it's a great thing to get involved in. It's good for your head.
It's amazing how quickly you can advance once it gels for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, which brings us to the next one. You reminded me, I spoke to you about... Yeah,
you told me this story years ago. I always loved it, so I'll...
You tell me.
Well, the story I remember is that one of your mates somehow or other came up with a bass guitar, and then from that was the idea of let's form a band. And I remember you saying that the first rehearsal was in somebody's laundry, and you only could play the only thing that you knew was the first part of Dock of the Bay, because nobody knew the bridge. So
yeah. And it was a bridge too far. So here he is, Otis. Yeah.
And the next one, I mean, I've got a bit of a rock and roll theme going here because, hey, that's what got us all excited, blokes of our age, about music in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's John Lennon, and it's obvious that from this song that he loves rock and roll music. But talking about starting from scratch, his mother gave him a guitar. She didn't know how to play guitar, and there wasn't any money for lessons. She could play banjo, so she showed him a couple of banjo chords, and that's what he used to get started. He'd just play those banjo chords, and he was playing skiffle, so it didn't really matter. And but he'd watch other guitarists and see where their fingers were on the frets.
Yep.
He'd remember that, and then he'd go down to the music store and say to the bloke who was selling guitars, "What's this chord called?"
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And while I'm here, you may as well show me another chord.
Yep.
You know? And that's how. And from that beginning, he became probably the best rhythm guitarist of his period.
Yeah,
he was sensational.
You know, the thing about art in general, you know, whether it be painting or poetry or, you know, writing, music, whatever, the one thing that always gets me about it is that you'll make mistakes, but sometimes that mistake will be better than what you had in your head, you know, and it leads you to different places, you know. It is the most amazing thing about art.
That's it wakens you up to things,
doesn't
it?
Now, from the Beatles to the Stones, of course, you have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought you told me that
Dingley Village.
Dingley Village boys, they like their 70s music, and so I sort of went with a bit of a rock and roll theme for the next few. A couple of really well-known tracks and a couple of more obscure, all about rock and roll. This Rolling Stones song, Mick and Keith didn't write this, even though they've got the songwriting credit for it. Ronnie Wood wrote it. And Ronnie Wood used to have this big house called The Wick, and it was a bit of a flop house and party house for all of the musicians coming into town. And Keith Richards was staying there for a while. Ronnie put in a home studio, and they were working on this song that he'd written called It's Only Rock and Roll, But I'd Like It. And it was sounding pretty good. And Keith said, "Why don't we get Mick to come and sing this? It's his sort of song." So they did. And Mick turned up, did the vocal. Mick and Keith put their heads together and said, "You know what? This would be a hit single for the Rolling Stones." So they said to Ronnie Wood, "How about we'll take It's Only Rock and Roll and we'll give you one of ours?" So they must have stuck a couple of brandies into Ronnie Wood, and he agreed. The Stones took away what they'd recorded and tried to record it themselves, but realised after a few attempts that the version that they'd done at Ronnie Wood's place was much better. So that's what ended up as the recorded single. So Charlie Watts is not on drums. Kenny Jones from the Small Faces is on drums. I'm not sure who the bass player was.
Not a Stones thing at all. There you go. Joan Jett, what a classic this is.
It's a great record.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a great record, and she sings it so well. I watched the clip from the playlist yesterday and was amazed that I had forgotten how good it was. And like I said, a couple of obscure ones that maybe the Dingley Village Boys would like to have a go at. Ian Hunter, great old rocker from Mott the Hoople, with his Still Love Rock and Roll. I Still Love Rock and Roll. And a very strange one from Tony Joe White, Even Trolls Love Rock and Roll.
Well, I've never heard of that.
It's a funny track.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is interesting. HSCC, this is a band that's just arrived on the scene that were a cover band, a good cover band. Now, take it from there. What's happened here?
Yeah, well, a mutual friend of ours, Gavin, put me onto these guys years ago during COVID. And what they were just a group of musos who used to set up in their lounge room, and they'd find a singer, all from Adelaide, and, okay, find a song that suited them. They'd film it and put it on YouTube. One thing led to another. There was constantly changing lineup of people singing the songs. And they've had something like 1 billion views on social media platforms, and they've had feedback from Mick Fleetwood. Mick Fleetwood said somebody sent him a cover of one of their songs, and he said, "Well, when you come to America, you're definitely playing at my club, and I'm playing drums with you." So now I think they did a tour of Australia last year, and now Michael Chugg, the legendary promoter, is promoting another tour and talking about taking them overseas at the end of the year. I highly recommend them to you. They just do fantastic cover. They're all cover versions.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've settled on a lineup now, so they just pick the singer to suit the song.
Yep.
So
just get onto the YouTube and look up Max Music Shack and you'll hear it. It's HSCC. And we've got to finish off with this because that's what it's all about. I've just been watching a very short film clip of my grandson and his cousin having their first jam with guitars and drums, and it's just wonderful to see it, you know, because I've lived it, and there I'm watching it happen again. But they're a lot younger than we were.
Yeah. Before we go, I just we were trying to emphasise the benefits of getting involved.
Yes, indeed.
And I was just talking to you, John, about my brother who. There are many, many ways into this. He started by, he joined a thing called the Bums, which is the Brisbane Ukulele Musicians Society. And so all you need to do is buy a ukulele. You can buy a little tuning thing to go on the neck so you don't even have to have a musical ear. You can stay in tune. People who organise the nights at bowling clubs or whatever send you the chords, and you just learn those chords, turn up and follow the bouncing ball and play along. I've been to one, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, they are amazing. The ukulele really has broadened
They're in every city now, so if you wanted to get involved, you easily could. Another thing that my brother was talking about, he's involved in a jamming group at the South Brisbane Men's Shed, and he says there are many in Queensland. He mentioned one at Coolum, and it's open to everyone. You don't have to be a member of the Men's Shed. And out of that, they've got a hobby band that you know, plays at local markets and plays at a restaurant for a feed and a beer. They're called Out on Bail. There's a couple of clips on YouTube if you're interested of them. And the other thing, I mean, it just, he started with ukuleles and then just kept on going, taking guitar lessons. And then he joined choirs, and there's many, many choirs these days to get involved in.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to shout out to all the men sheds out there. I mean, even if you can't play an instrument, you can certainly sing a cappella, you know. So it's, you get a little choir together, that's a pretty good idea.
This one that my brother's involved in is called Soul Song, and they've just done two sold-out shows at the Adelaide Fringe Festival.
Wow.
They've got a couple more bookings, and it seems that they may be going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival next year. He's also been to America with a gospel choir that he's involved with.
Yep.
And so, you know, there's so many ways into it, and there's so many benefits from it, even just the social benefits of it, of hanging out with a few mates and having a bash, you know, and as Bob Marley says, you know.
Yeah, jamming. Yeah.
That's
fine. I got into the music business by accident. It was only because of my mates who shoved me into it, you know. Okay, I could hold a tune, but the last thing I ever expected was to be on a stage. So, start and you never know where it can lead.
That's right.
Thanks,
that's
Mac. Right.
Okay.
Get onto that Music Shack. It's on YouTube. Just look it up, Mac's Music Shack. Well, you know that I think music is the best thing for everyone, but today we've heard more about how true that is. Remember to share the podcast with your shedding mates. Give them a hand to follow along on Spotify if you can, or send them to www.menshed.org/The Shed Wireless, where they can now just click on the YouTube link. Until next time, folks, for the love of shedding.
It don't matter if you work with wood or fabricating metal is the thing you understood. Whatever is your game, everyone's the same. Yeah, we can do it all at the Men Shed. Short, fat, tall, skinny, hairy, bald. In the shed, it's welcome one and all. Share the skills you know, we're all having a go. There's a helping hand.